right, everybody, welcome back in to Mining Stock Daily. We have been on a hard assets bull run as of lately, despite a little bit of correction in precious metals. But what we, you know, what we haven't spoken much about is what is happening in the tin market. You may remember a few years ago, we had our episode where we first talked about tin, and I titled it A Very Tin Special, and we welcomed in Mr. Mark Thompson. Well, after a lot of me nagging Mark and scheduling and rescheduling, in fact, when we were first set to go do this, tin was trading about $28,000 per ton. It's now about $34,000 a ton, and it wasn't too long ago this was originally scheduled. So, Mark, it's a pleasure to have you back here on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Trevor. It's good to be back.
Yeah. I guess general market ideas of why the tin is just so relentless. What are you seeing, or what are you hearing from the ground and amongst your cohorts?
So this is worthwhile talking about a little bit across all of markets. I think there is so little specialist capital left in trading metal derivatives and junior mining stocks, the preemptive fundamental moves you would normally expect just isn't happening because there's not enough money to make it happen. So it feels to me when I look at something like when you look at Tayco, you know, it's suddenly going sideways. Everyone knows it's running out and it quadruples in a few weeks. It feels to me that dynamic is the same that we are seeing in the metals markets as well. I always say any films are quadruple. Tayco is a special situation with a very, very large deficit. But what I kind of do is pick a theme between them where the specialist capital that normally for the last 6 months, 12 months would have been positioned looking for these moves and moving prices higher and lots of people buying and selling, it just doesn't exist anymore. So we are transitioning to a point where you always get to the point of extreme fundamentals. You know, kind of saying planning out to the metal, that's a little bit too short, that's not really my opinion. We get to these inflection points and suddenly we're going to be moves. So if you look at copper, for example, now copper has done the two most scullion thing I had ever seen in my life trading metals, wherever it is now, 31, 32 years. Treatment charges for copper today traded at minus 20, minus 2, which is minus $20 per ton. And a treatment charge for refining for treating copper concentrates and 2 cents minus 2 cents an hour for refining that into refined copper. So smelters are paying for the privilege of turning copper concentrate into metal. I say smelters, the traders are. I suspect the traders are. Some traders being very short of having to buy any price. I mean, this is even more ridiculous than negative interest rates that we saw right up on 3 years ago. and it's sort of taken that level of, I don't want to use the word stupidity. I don't think the right word is. It's just stupefied me the last few weeks to see these treatment charges move negative. And that's suddenly, everyone may well bring it up and look, and we've seen in the last few weeks, 3 or 4 big funds buy, I'm guessing, half a million tons of copper between them. Copper's up 25% off the loan, and just beginning to look like it started. So, questions about tin. I've done nothing to talk about co-color copper so far. So, specifically on tin, it's that same dynamic. You know, when you had me on a year ago, and I was saying, well, look, this is what's happening. Myanmar is not exporting at the moment. There's problems in Indonesia. There's rumors of corruption investigations. There's potential issues in Africa with the insurgency at Kindu State. And by the way, all that's kind of icing on the date because no one's been looking for tin for 30 years. There's no new projects. There's a deficit of supply coming, and there's massive demand growth coming from not only from consumer electronics, but also from things like solar sector. It's gone from 0% to 7% in about 15 years of the tin market. And he's putting money to continue to grow at 10 or 15% at the tin market over the next 10 or 15 years. And it may have had a perfect storm. And then since we last spoke, Myanmar has stopped exporting. They put a 30% export tax on physical tin exports. So they've appropriated a number of licenses. You've seen the most enormous corruption program in Indonesia. It's talking about $26 billion. has been pilfered from PT Timor, the state-owned tin mining company. It's such a point that the Attorney General, as I understand, is now the most popular person in Indonesia because he's actually cracking down on political corruption. And we've seen in January, February, March this year, zero tons exported from Indonesia. And then, they're talking about maybe 44,000 tons only this year for export licenses. This is a country that exported 78,000 tons last year. I think they did 145,000 tons. I would probably expect them to do so by 80 this year. They did something for us, 30,000 tons down. That's 9%, 8% of the world supply. Not happening. And there are very good reasons. One is not just dealing with the corruption that's been endemic, really mining on that Banco de Catalans and Kuno, but also, they've been very successful in emitting copper in making companies go downstream. So instead of just digging things out the ground and selling to the Chinese and all the value add going to China, they do want his smelters and downstream industries to be put in Indonesia. Very sensible. I hope they do the same in tin, because I think it would be very good for the Indonesian economy to benefit from industries being invested. But the best way to do that is to do what they're doing. It's hard what they sell. Force people to come to Indonesia and invest in new industries in order to secure units and get a higher tin price because of it. So I think that would be an incredibly sensible. That aside, I'll start with the massive bull thesis we had last time we spoke. We actually had all of these production issues. And the question to me is not why is tin not at 35,000? The question is, why is it only gone to 35,000? So I'm talking to a lot of the team that return, but there's no loss of issue and come back on.
No, absolutely. I mean, to kind of recap what I'm hearing is if we stick with tin, and we'll talk about copper here a little bit, because I do think those negative treatment charges are absolutely fascinating, Mark. But with tin, it doesn't necessarily seem speculative in this move. It is incredibly fundamental. But can you tell me, we are hearing a little bit more ruckus about, we're seeing a lot more sanctions against Eastern metal suppliers, specifically Russia. Is there any sort of conversation about the tin market and maybe having similar actions against any sort of the trades coming in from Eastern countries like Myanmar, Indonesia, and they're not free trading partners? I mean, is that also keeping this thing propped up as well?
No, I don't think that's massively relevant. I mean, so Myanmar is sort of pretty much close to 100% of its production to China.
Okay.
But the political issue going along on the border there, as I understand it, there's about 150,000 ethnic Chinese that sort of migrated to live in Myanmar. And we're running a number of criminal enterprises, phishing scams, downwing, trading drugs, whatever. And the Chinese government has had a big crackdown on that. It's created a big schism with the Myanmar junta in terms of the money that's now costing them. The junta has retaliated by stopping Jingdo out. I mean, this is all hearsay. I don't know whether this is actually what's actually going on in the ground or motivations. But I can tell you on the Chinese official numbers, there's almost no Jingdo into China officially. I'd be pretty sure there's some being smuggled in, but it's not the 40,000 tons that I was expecting to be produced this year. So that's not relevant to Western numbers. I'm not going to see sanctions on that because that's Myanmar units going into China. And however that plays out in the coming months, we shall have to see. In terms of Russia's, about 2,000 or 3,000 tons a year of tin, and that there must be a net importer. I'm off the top of my head on that one. So it wouldn't be relevant. That's only relevant on things like platinum, palladium, nickel, copper, things that they are big producers and big exporters of. We've seen that banned down into LME warehouses going forward. In terms of other producers, everyone else is a main producer in Southeast Asia. Is because not friendly, Commonwealth or friendly. Indonesia is not unfriendly to the West. There's a little bit comes out of Malaysia, a little bit comes out of Australia. So I've had to see that as being a sanctions issue going forward for Western units. What we are seeing in terms of units or irons here from units is because the Chinese smelters have not been this mild, not at Brazil, they've been extremely aggressive in securing African and Australian supply. So where you had half the offtake from that was actually Renaissance mine in Tasmania, was going to the customs house of Tasafka and LSC, which is Thailand and Malaysia. That's now going to China. And I think ICOS, we hear their name as being very, very aggressive buyers in Africa as well. So they're finally getting their units from wherever they can, leaving the West short of units in China. Probably a smaller and smaller role. There's a little bit of sitting around the Shanghai Exchange. There's only about 4,000 tons on the London Metal Exchange. And I expect that to be substantially gone by the end of the summer, if not sooner.
I want to ask you about future demand. I mean, what one thing we did not talk about a whole heck of a lot when we first talked about the tin market was, well, we didn't have this artificial intelligence uproar a year or two ago, Mark, and that's really putting a lot of speculation, not only in the amount of data centers that need to be built in kind of preparation for AI to take over the world, but also the chips. Now, listen, the use of tin predominantly, we've talked about the use of solder to get the glue that binds those chips to the boards. I was actually reading a book called Chip Wars the other day. They were talking about extreme ultraviolet light, which is used to produce these very small chips, which requires a ton of tin and just in the production of these chips, which is fascinating. I mean, maybe talk about, have you had any a reinterpretation of your demand thesis for tin going forward? Because the last time we talked, we weren't talking artificial intelligence.
So I learned when you ask these hard questions and I completely tell now answer a different one. So I'm just going to talk about elasticity of demand in general. So, you know, one of the points I made on Twitter this week is you take an iPhone, it's got a gram that's in it, typing that's 3.5 cents. You know, an iPhone is, I think, about $1,000. I don't think there is a tin price where people don't buy iPhones. You know, they can go 10x, 50x, 100x, and people are still going to buy an iPhone. The same for a $500 washing machine with 40 cents of tin in it. It's on the electronic side, there's still a lot of miniaturization over the last 15 years. There's a limit to the amount of miniaturization you can do, and I still use tin as your solder. Because as it gets smaller, you've got a bigger problem with something called tin whiskers, which is the tin recrystallizing and creating short circuits on the circuit board. So I think a lot of the miniaturization that's going to be done has been done. And you're bashing probably a linear miniaturization with an exponential demand growth 4-5% a year just on consumer electronics, adding data centers, adding AI. And you know, for me, that 52% of the market is almost entirely inelastic demand. You know, when I say almost entirely, I'm talking about the tin price go up 5x, and it's not going to affect demand for any of that sector. So if you take my second thesis at the layman, on most reliant simple thesis I have is sitting on an 8% deficit back end of this year. All of that 8% deficit is about happening to be warmer than the other 48% of the market. Because electronics is simply... it's not going to be a cost factor. It's just something you buy onto the consumers. It's what you pay for your tin and it goes through. So you look at where that demand structure might be and what price that happens at. And that's when you start thinking you could really see some very, very silly prices on tin. So there are things like flat glass. So flat glass, window glass, is made by something called the Gutterton process, where you throw webs and glass and molds and tin. That is unsubstitutable. It consumes about 2% of the tin market about 8,000 tons a year. And all flat glass has a few atoms of tin on one side of it. It's a glass on the left side or an outside, which I love that. If you look at a plate of glass, you can actually work out which one it is. I've never mind that work. You can tell the difference when you look sideways at a plate of glass. But that's 100% elastic because you can't substitute that production process with anything else. So that's not going to bear any of the production loss. You're going to have 13% of the market that goes into stabilizing plastics. So things like PVC need tin chemicals in them to stop them decaying in UV lights. Then you tell you some other substances. But again, it's a cost that is very easy for the $600 billion plastic industry, currently paying $2 billion for tin, can pass on to end consumers because it's just a cost for everybody. It's not a competitive advantage. It's just what you need for that product to be inspect and not, as you know, you're not going to be selling PVC windows to watch the glass fall out because there's no tin in the PVC. It's not exactly a good business model for window manufacturers. So I saw a lot of elasticity of demand in the plastics demand sector. So, you know, we're now down to talking about 45% of the market is going to take about 8%. So that's only us is going to lose a third. It's just like tin cans. Can you see a situation where heavily based aluminium cans or plastic covered paper or something, and there's melting things of the soup with it. And that's why maybe something has to happen. And it puts in those Dillahashee factories. I still say that's hard plastic, where this is the cost you pass on to the end consumer. You know, yes, you do have any prices that sort of ticking up as well. I'm not sure you could replace the tons of. They really make it in the batteries these days with lithium batteries, because we know the world is short of lithium batteries anyway, or enough antimony to do it. So I think you must see some less tuning than acid batteries, because you don't have to, because that's probably the most price sensitive part of the demand curve. So I'm fascinated to see what happens. I wish I could give you an answer, but I'm not doing that. My answer is anything is almost entirely inelastic. It's tuned in tens of billions of consumer items a year in very small interval values per individual item.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start talking about big deficits, raised stockpiles, supply shocks, 4% demand growth, which can't happen, that's now hard bone too, lots of people say the tin market about 500,000 tons by 2030. It's not going to happen. There are no scenarios where the world produces 500,000 tons of tin a year in 2030. I look at that, we're in 6 years, 900,000 tons of tin supply. Just not happening.
Yeah.
So, it's great. If it'll be great to be a liner, it'll be great to be in production. I think there's going to be a massive reevaluation of metal in the ground in terms of the people who've been sat on projects for 15 years going sideways, wondering why they couldn't raise a penny. You know, and I think it's going to be fantastic time to be within the market.
Well, and maybe let's talk about where we had left off as far as the explorers go, Mark. I think in this last cycle, about 2 years ago, not a lot of companies, I would say maybe a half a dozen tin exploration companies that came to the market globally. And I think it's safe to say that about 90% of those since then have really, really struggled. In fact, I can tell you if they have a penny to continue exploration or not. But there is, Cornish Metals continues to dewater that project there in the UK. I mean, that continues to move forward. And I've seen a couple of presentations from then. But a couple other of those companies that came out in the market circa 2022 market, that's been crickets. Are we going to start seeing these very small micro cap explorers come back and start piquing somebody's interest again?
So I just for a test that is that I am Cornish Metals, I am still at Resources, I am first in level 13. I was down at South Crofty for Cornish Metals 3 weeks ago, very, very impressed how they're spending the money, how the dewatering is going. The dewatering part is amazing. I mean, they're taking tomato soup and turning it into drinking water. They're a fantastic job at dewatering the mine. But I would hope realistically, when this gets the first production, it's been another year of dewatering and studies, and then a year of raising money, a year and a half to build it. I think, if I'm honest, 3.5 years is the earliest I can see them in production. I'd love them to raise money quicker, and I'd love someone to come in and just go, this is just a no-brainer. And then they drill, 2 meters at 10% tin, not too far from the bottom of the shaft, and they get their value for it. It's a very surprise to me how low their share price is. Stella, I've been talking to those fellows in the last couple of weeks. I think they've got it's high railing, it's better the deeper it goes. But again, it's like, what's the mechanism for a $20, $30 million concrete or $200 million line? You're not doing shareholders any services by letting them at these points. These are tough decisions for exploration companies and development companies. The same for us too. The first thing to put out resource up rail at this second project that's at 2 hours a day, I mean, 135,000 tons contained tin. A mere, whatever that is, $4 billion, $5 billion at today's prices in the second project. And yet, it's been $20 million market cap. It makes no sense. And it won't be around, maybe maybe like that for a while. I don't know. I don't know where people have been coming and buy these things. I don't know what tin price it needs. I think that if people fall on, I could also go through, but people have held on to these things for a while, they're not going to be sellers, because, you certainly wait a lifetime for a market like this to come along. You don't want to be giving away to the Johnny Dunn ladies if they can pick it up and launch a year lows. So I'm very, very bullish on it. And I think that I would not dissuade anybody from providing testing producers Alpha Min and Metals X. I mean, there's some risks on Alpha Min in terms of the activity in the DRC. I think Metals X is still very cheap. You know, I think you'd expose the two pricing existing producers like that. The leverage is to the land on the ground is just ludicrously cheap.
Real quick, let's talk copper. Mark, I mean, you did in the first part of this interview, you did mention a little bit of copper and the negative TC charges. There's a little bit of a note here from analysts from Raymond James I saw today that maybe the demand side from China might be a little bit overblown because of much construction that they built in the last cycle. People are starting to question, well, what is there left to build, which would require more copper? Obviously, we get the digital infrastructure and electronics part of the whole thing. But what are your thoughts here on the supply and demand side of copper here in the next, you know, I guess, midterm?
So I'm an analyst, and I heard this a lot. I'm at over a million ton deficit this year or 2 million ton next year. A game like Tim, that can't happen because there's not enough inventory to fund that. So the question I ask is, what price is the market balance at? And there is a lot of elasticity demand for other uses of copper. So you're not going to see, you know, if we've got another supply disruption on Tim, you can see something incredible. If you've got another supply disruption on copper, you're not going to see the same sort of multiple. You should see that sit to your price, but see it go up. You've got visible shocks in terms of what is held at the London Metal Exchange, the Shanghai Exchange, the Codex Exchange, and in terms of, you know, these guys hold inventory to support the ministry of the price. One of the things that isn't really appreciated in the copper market is that you also have another stock, which is the concentrate stockpile between mines and smelters. But typically, smelters like to hold 3 weeks to 3 months of supply, and your treatment charge they manage to buy at, contango is, I actually cost, or rates, etc. And the mines are said to have been occasionally down the market and shipments and whatever. And that inventory is very, very hidden from the market because you've got, you know, unless you're sitting there like a truck in a vehicle and trading there, you're just not aware of what those stocks are. So we sit there right now, and treatment charges is your proxy to that. So the lower treatment charges, the more the miners have the upper hand, and the higher treatment charges, the more the smelters have the upper hand. At least done last year, we were probably around $85 a ton. Treatment charge, 8.5 cents a pound. This iron charge, which is historically a really good number for the smelters, and it's a business number for the miners, and everyone's happy. I think the breaking among the, assuming you're a clean concentrate, not lots of gold and silver into it, or you're not being paid lots of money for sulfuric acid production, typically the breaking with the smell was around 50 and 5. Okay, and we're at minus 20 and 2 right now. So this is egregious numbers. And my interpretation is this, is that yes, metal has been well supplied, there's metal around, there's lots of units around in China. I'm not seeing metal premiums. That's the iron, I'm not seeing backwardations, and then the metals market at this point, there's probably a little bit of a surplus. You know, sure, I read a half million, ton of gas and a half million tons a year. But the deficit has only been hidden in the concentrates. And it's been hidden by the smelters pulling down on their inventory, by the melters, by miners reducing their inventory. And you get to inflection voltage, again, I think it's why I said you need it's inflection voltage, which is like copper's been up 25% off the low. Where suddenly people realize copper is in a deficit, it's just metals being in a surplus because they've been pulling down the inventory on concentrate. And there's actually mines of metal has been at the deficit because we've lost a lot of supply. We've obviously lost Cobra Panama from First Quantum, a lot of production shortfalls out of people like Anwell American, and all this comes back to COVID and high grading, not spending money on all the exploration work and maintenance, etc. Having to catch up in a couple of years, you run an asset for cash. You've got a pinch for that sample in the future. So there's quite a lot of that going on. I think copper's in a massive deficit. It's going to go much, much higher. And we're going to find what price rations are marked.
All right, Mark, let's leave it at that. We've covered a lot of ground, a lot of tin, a lot of copper. Appreciate your insight. It was good seeing you in Toronto, even though it was a very short period of time. Friendly to just run into you, actually. So I wasn't expecting to see that.
It was very serendipitous. A very nice party of a meet a friend of ours. And, yes. And it was interesting that the only people not drinking at all that night in the place.
No, just you and I. Could you believe it?
I'm drinking party water.
All right, Mark, good to talk to you once again. It's late your time. We're going to let you go, but have a great rest of your week.
Thanks for that.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.